Thank you, Katya. And thanks, Ruby and Elizabeth, for organizing this wonderful event. And thank you very much to Professor Goodwin Gill for his immense, immense patience with me over, I'll just say, over 10 years of supervising my DPhil thesis. I think probably the longest standing student you had ever had. I finished last year, well, I defended last year. And the thesis focused on the interaction between international human rights law and international humanitarian law, and it looked at the views of various international international and regional bodies, courts, as well as state practices reflected in submissions to those bodies. Today I'm actually going to focus on the views of the, not the Inter-American system, but the ICRC, the International Committee of the Red Cross, on that topic, on the topic of the interaction between human rights law and humanitarian law in armed conflict. Just to give you a little bit of background, in 1996, the International Court of Justice gave an advisory opinion in the nuclear weapons case, in which it said that human rights law is applicable in armed conflict, but that its provisions had to be interpreted, in that case, the right to life had to be interpreted by reference to the provisions of IHL, international humanitarian law. And since then, international courts and bodies and commentators around the world have relied on that statement and kept saying IHL is lex specialis, lex specialis meaning the most specific law in armed conflict, and therefore takes precedence over human rights law. And that is the way they've explained the relationship between HRL and IHL, by reference to lex specialis. And this has become a very, very criticized view, because many commentators feel that it really complicates the issue, it doesn't bring clarity to the issue. And there was a recent case, the European Court of Human Rights in 2014, Hassan versus the United Kingdom, in which the European Court this involved the right to liberty of a young Iraqi male during the hostility stage of the Iraqi conflict. And the European Court confronted the issue of extraterritoriality, the right to liberty and security, and the interaction between human rights law and humanitarian law. And they decided that human rights law and humanitarian law, because they had to be interpreted together, they had to be applied concomitantly. And therefore, in practically what they said was that although Article 5 of the Convention applied, it had to be interpreted so that the Geneva Convention grounds for detention could also be accommodated. That was one. But also, two, that the rationale behind the procedural protections in the European Convention would determine how the IHL procedural protections for detention would be interpreted. So they basically, they were blending IHL and HRL. And there's been a lot of commentary on this case, both negative and positive. But on the positive side, I think most people say two things which are positive. One is that the European Court finally confronted the relationship between HRL and IHL, and two, that they didn't rely on this IHL as lex specialis concept to explain that relationship. Even though the United Kingdom relied quite heavily on that concept in their submissions. What I want to do today is look at the views of the International Committee of the Red Cross for three reasons. One is because the ICRC's views are not often discussed when we talk about the relationship between HRL and IHL, and two, because the ICRC, unlike the European Court or the Human Rights Committee or the Inter-American Human Rights System, is a body that focuses on, has expertise on, is biased towards IHL and not HRL. So I think it's important that we look at that body, because that way we can avoid accusations that we're looking at, you know, wishy-washy human rights law kind of bodies only, that they are not bleeding heart human rights people. They are also looking at the hard-nosed IHL IHL stuff. And three, because ICRC has actually looked at, has explained what it means by IHL is the lex specialis in armed conflict. They have explained it in detail, unlike the other bodies. They have tried to apply it in a very nuanced and principled way. But I will. But what I want to discuss today is, even though they've done that, they too have been unable to stick to a rigid framework of IHL as lex specialis, and have had, in certain circumstances, to blend IHL with human rights law in certain circumstances. So let me quickly move on to the ICRC. As many of you know, the ICRC's views are not binding on states, but they are treated as especially authoritative on the issue of the rules applicable to armed conflict. For many, many years, they didn't actually refer to human rights law in their interpretations, but more recently they have started, in their statements and interpretations, started referring to human rights law. They unambiguously accept that human rights law continues to apply in armed conflict. Their general position is that it's complementary, but they explicitly acknowledge that there are very real differences between the two systems of law, both generally and in specific cases like torture, detentions, the use of force, and extraterritorial targeted killings. And when speaking generally about the relationship between HRL and IHL, they say that IHL is lex specialis. They say that in international armed conflicts, because IHL has detailed rules, there in general there is no real reason to look at HRL, or no reason to refer to HRL. So it's trying to apply a pretty rigid framework where it's saying that when there are rules, when there are explicit rules of IHL, we don't need to look at HRL. We look at HRL only when IHL is silent. But what it has kind of unwittingly succeeded in doing by actually explicitly explaining their position on IHL as lex specialis is to show that it cannot apply this principle in a context-specific way, and has had to actually move into a more nuanced position. Especially with respect to targeted killings and peaceful occupations. So their general position on the use of force against combatants is that international humanitarian law takes precedence, and HRL is not, human rights law is not relevant. They have on many occasions talked about the differences between IHL and HRL in this regard. Very basically, the primary difference is that under human rights law, the killing of combatants is prohibited except as a last resort, whereas under IHL it is permitted because of the assumed military advantage gained from killing combatants. So even in publications that refer to, and this is called the principle of distinction, where combatants can be killed as opposed to civilians. So even in publications where the ICRC has referred extensively to human rights law when interpreting other norms and rules, they haven't referred to HRL when they interpret the principle of distinction. But in more recently, in their interpretive guidelines on the notion of direct participation in hostilities under IHL, it has said this. It has said that the kind and degree of force used must not exceed what is actually necessary to accomplish a legitimate military purpose in the prevailing circumstances. And then it goes on to say, the practical importance of the restraining function will increase with the ability of a party to the conflict to control the circumstances and area in which its military operations are conducted, and may become decisive when armed forces operate against selected individuals in situations comparable to peacetime policing. They claim to derive the principle from an interplay between modern notions and principles of military necessity and humanity, but I don't think that is an accepted view, because military necessity and humanity are already encapsulated in the rules of IHL, and additional notions are usually not accepted as interpretive devices. And this is confirmed by ICRC advisors working on the subject, writing in their private capacity, but I think it gives us kind of an insight into the thinking of the ICRC, where they explain that in combat situations, in hostility situations, yes, IHL is the lex specialis, but when there is more control over a situation or territory, that HRL-like precautions become more relevant. So I think even the ICRC is now beginning to move towards a position where the more control a state has over a situation or a circumstance or a territory, it's willing to blend in more human rights law, despite its statements that in international armed conflicts at least, and with the use of lethal force at least, it is not looking at human rights law at all. And this is consistent with what other human rights law bodies have done, like the Human Rights Committee, like the various special rapporteurs on torture and extrajudicial assassinations. But what is important here is that the ICRC is saying it. The ICRC, which is focusing on IHL, which has a expertise on IHL, which arguably has a structural bias towards IHL, is also beginning to blend HRL and IHL together, at least in cases where we are moving, where the situation is moves away from a traditional battlefield situation. And as I said at the beginning, in Hassan, the European Court blended the two systems of law even in a hostility situation. And this is actually a positive move, I think. But it raises questions as to whether we have to start thinking of what kind of framework governs the blending of these two systems of law. Do we just leave it to a case-by-case analysis? One sense, it has to be a very fact-specific, issue-specific determination. But on the other hand, individuals, soldiers, people making decisions at the state level have to have some clarity and predictability. So how do we get there? Who has to do that? And what I would suggest is that the ICRC actually play a pretty important role in that, because of its expertise in IHL, which a lot of other bodies don't have, and also because it was one of the first bodies to explicitly recognize the very real differences between human rights law and humanitarian law.
Thank you very much.